There are a whole lot of people in Author Accelerator's book coach training program who don't want to have a whole new career. What they want is meaningful work that they can do in a small amount of time. And maybe that's because they want work to support their writing career, or maybe they're home raising children and they can only work a certain number of hours, and finding work they can do from home is the dream. At Author Accelerator, we support all kinds of book coaches, and we support people who only want to do it part-time. The week of January 23rd, I'm going to be hosting two 30-minute events that will show you how you can get through our training program if you only have 30-minute chunks of time. Come check it out if you're curious about book coaching and want a really meaningful and cool new side gig in 2023. The link to sign up is in the show notes.
Hey, hashtag AmWriting listeners, this is Jess coming to you from her office in Vermont to let you know that this week's episode is a repeat. We don't do this very often, but a couple of questions had come up recently in our Facebook group and in emails about cultivating relationships with booksellers. And who better to talk about that than Mary Laura Philpott, a longtime employee for Parnassus Bookstore, now a best-selling author, and she knows just about everything there is to know about cultivating relationships with booksellers. So enjoy.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia.
And I'm Jess Leahy.
And this is Hashtag AmWriting.
With Jess and KJ.
Welcome. Hashtag AmWriting is our podcast about all the writing things. Writing long things, short things, books, blog posts, and everything in between. But most of all, it is a podcast about the challenges of sitting down and getting the work done.
Keeping your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
You can't say that yet. They're going to think we're
That's
done.
That's true. It's we're not done. Don't leave. We are super excited, though, this week, because we have a guest. We have a guest we've been really excited to have on for a while.
Yes. Welcome, Mary Laura Philpott.
Hi, Mary Laura.
Thanks for having me.
We are so excited, because today is a topic also that we all feel very, very strongly about. KJ, what's our topic today?
Hashtag you and your bookstore.
Hashtag you and your bookstore.
We love bookstores. And Mary Laura has one of the greatest jobs in the world when it comes to bookstores. So tell us about it.
Yes, I actually have. I have lots of jobs, but they all sort of overlap. So my main day job is at Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee. It's an independent bookstore, which means it's not a chain. It is owned by the novelist Ann Patchett and her business partner, Karen Hayes. And I work on our marketing and social media side. I'm the editor of our online magazine, which is called Musing. You can find it at parnassusmusing.net. And that's where we post reading lists, articles about books, interviews with authors, Ann Patchett's blog, articles about our shop dogs, all sorts of things. I run that as my main day job. My secondary day job is with Nashville Public Television, and I co-host an Emmy-winning now literary interview show where we interview authors. And you can watch it on TV if you're in Nashville, or you can watch it online at awordonwords.org. Those are my day jobs. That's what pays my bills. On the side, I am also a writer, as you guys know. I'm an essayist, and I publish essays in the New York Times and other places. And I'm also an author. I have a book called Penguins with People Problems.
That we love.
Yes. You're a cartoonist.
weird little illustrated book. But because I'm sort of involved in the literary and publishing ecosystem on all sides, I've really been able to see what kinds of amazing things bookstores can do for writers. And I'm excited that you guys are bringing attention to that.
Yeah. So that's what we want to talk about is, you know, having a great relationship with your bookstore. And for those of you that are thinking, but I don't have a book and I won't have a book for a really long time, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Start now. I mean, you want a loving relationship with your favorite bookstores pretty much, I mean, from day one. If nothing else, they're going to steer you to books to read, give you a good place to write sometimes.
Yes,
This is our community, our bookstore people. And so let's talk about how we can get closer to them.
Well, and before we do that, I want to sort of on the end from the author's perspective, I want to point out that
there are a few bookstores that did some really, really amazing things for me just simply because I was a customer, not necessarily because, you know, I had begged them to do things, but simply because I had a loyalty to them and they felt like they had a loyalty to me. Our local bookstore kept my book up front in the bookstore on a stand for almost a year after it came out. And other bookstores have just been so kind. They're, you know, they're more likely to think of you and recommend you. And they'll say, oh, you know what? This author shops here, that kind of stuff. And I think the furthest we usually tend to go with this is support your local independent bookstore. But I want to, we want to take that deeper and talk about what that means too.
Well, and then support your local bookstore, even if it's not an independent. Our Absolutely. Local bookstore happens to be a College Barnes & Noble. And they are still great people, and they still have employees, and they still give us books, and it is still a huge part of our community. I would hate to see it go.
I absolutely love that bookstore. In fact, the because I teach high school, the YA, the sort of children's bookseller there for a long time, every single week I would come in because I was going in every week to get books for my students. And every week she knew I was coming, and every week she had recommendations for me, which meant so much to me. So
that's great.
Let's just start with, from your perspective, why it's important for writers to have relationships with bookstores.
So if you think about what any writer's number one goal is, if they're writing a book and their book is getting ready to come out, the number one thing you want to do is reach readers and get your book into readers' hands. And if you kind of divide readers into two categories, there are readers, just people who read books, and then there are what I think of as super readers, who are readers who not only read and love books, but they also talk about books or work in books or in some way have the power to exponentially widen your reach in terms of how many people they can put the, how many people's hands they can put the book into, and not just like tell a million people about it, but get it into the right hands, people who are your audience, who are looking for information about the stuff that you write about. Booksellers are just like you were saying about the YA bookseller or KJ at your local store. Booksellers are super readers. They are the people who love books so much that they've made it their job to read books and recommend them to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of those things that I value so much in the bookstores I love the most is when you go in and you say, okay, my kid loved X book, Y book, and Z book. Now what should I get? That's like magic to me when they say, oh, if you love these things, here's something in that vein that they might love.
It's a superpower.
It really is a superpower.
And just like you were saying, your bookstore kept your book up on a display for a year past its publication date. That kind of thing happens. Sometimes it happens because they know you and you're a customer or you've supported things that happen there. But very often it's happening because the people who work in that store read the book and loved it. We don't make our displays based on an algorithm. We make them based on what we've read and what we know our customers will love. So in addition to making those displays, a lot of bookstores have blogs. A lot of bookstores do events and host authors on their book tours. A lot of bookstores are involved in choosing the authors for book festivals, which are opportunities to get yourself and your book up in front of, you know, hundreds or thousands of people. A lot of bookstores have subscriptions. At Parnassus, we have a couple. We have one called the First Editions Club, and we have one for YA called Parnassus Next. But that's basically where once a month we send out a signed copy of our favorite book to hundreds of people.
So, wow.
That's really cool.
A lot of times people think about bookstores as, well, a bookstore is a great place to sell one or two books at a time. But booksellers have a lot of different ways that they do big sales as well and reach big groups of people.
I have to say, one of my favorite bookstores out there is a bookstore in Salt Lake City, Utah, called The King's English. And yes. Betsy Burton started that bookstore a long time ago. And my in-laws have been longtime shoppers at that store. And my first article I published after my oldest son, who's now 18, was born, was an article in their newsletter called The Ink Slinger, called Benjamin's Bookcase. And it was about my excitement about filling up his bookcase. And so when my book came out and my publisher said to me, what bookstores are really important to you? Where do you really want us to put in the effort to get you a reading? I said, it has to be The King's English and one other bookseller, the Brookline Booksmith, that I just love. And King's English really went out there for me. They got a separate, bigger space. They had huge numbers of people there because they were able to get that pull because they have a community of readers who are love mm-hmm. books. People came out who don't normally read in the genre my book was in. I mean, it was amazing what they were able to pull off. And I think that comes just from having that relationship.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of sort of the literary or publishing ecosystem and how it stays alive. You know, you wrote the book and your publisher made the book, and you know, you had an editor and you had a cover artist, you had all these other people, and then readers are going to read the book. But that bookstore was the piece of the puzzle that pulled it all together, that said, all right, author, you come here, book, you come here, you hundreds of people get in this room. And that is such a valuable part of how books get out there and get into the hands of readers.
So how would you recommend that writers go about starting to build that relationship?
I would say exactly what KJ said earlier, which is start early. Don't feel like, well, I don't need to build this relationship until I have a book coming out. In fact, if anything, walking into a bookstore you've never been to before and you've lived in that city for 10 years and you just walk in and go, hey, I have a book coming out, let's be friends, is a little awkward, just like that would be in a social situation. So show up, be a customer, be somebody who comes to author events and listens and supports other authors. If you use social media, tweet about the events that are happening in your local bookstore. Meet the staff. Generally, in any bookstore family, staff family, you've got this eclectic group of people, and somebody there shares your taste in books. And if you get to know everybody, you'll get to know, okay, that bookseller reads the kind of stuff I like to read. And that not only means you're getting great stuff to read, but it means that when the time comes, there's a bookseller who knows you really well and knows your taste and probably knows other people who would like to read what you're writing.
That's why I love those staff recommends boards, because you know the booksellers and you know who likes what you like, I automatically go to certain writers on those walls or certain sellers on those walls.
You can find the bookseller who loves the stuff you love. Speaking of social media and promoting what's going on in your local bookstore, you can do this even if you don't have a local bookstore. I hear a lot of times from writers who say, I would love to support my indie bookstore, but it closed, or I live in the middle of nowhere. The American Booksellers Association, which is a nonprofit group of, I lost track of the number, it's like 2,500 independent bookstores across the United States, has a site called indiebound.org that works basically, you know, the same way any big database would work. You can look up any book under the sun, just like you would on Amazon, and you can find that book and its blurb and reviews and everything about it. But then what you can do that's really cool is you can type in your zip code and it'll find the nearest bookstore to you, and you can order it from a bookstore. If you live in the middle of nowhere and there's not a bookstore close to you, you can pick any bookstore to order it from. So if you're a person who has a book coming out and you want to support indie bookstores, but you don't have one really close to you, instead of tweeting out, here's my new book and an Amazon link, which anybody can find it on Amazon, you can do here's my new book and link to it on IndieBound. And no matter where your followers are, and you know, hopefully at this point you've built up a platform of followers everywhere, they can click on that link and they can order the book from their independent bookstore or from any independent bookstore. And that's a just fabulous way to support indies.
That's fantastic. I wanted to tell you about something really cool that happened last night. There's an independent bookseller that KJ and I just love, Northshire Books in Manchester Center. And I did not know this, but they have one in Saratoga Springs. Because last night I did a reading, I did an event near Saratoga, and they came out. And not only did they come out and have my book, they asked for my top picks from my speaking bibliography, and they had all of those as well. So last night I tweeted out my, the table, and I tagged all the other authors that were on the table, because, you know, Julie Lithcott-Hames was there, and Frank Bruni was there, and Ron Lieber was there, and Katie Hurley was there. And so what was so great is they sold almost three times as many books because the people that came out were buying my book, but then I had just recommended, you know, Dan Pink's Drive or, you know, Make It Stick. And so they picked up those as well. And it was really, really cool.
Wow.
And, you know, it was only a little awkward when someone said, I already have your book and I forgot it. So can you sign Dan Pink's book? I said, how about I give you a book plate instead?
That's the literary ecosystem at work, baby. That's fantastic.
It was really, really amazing. And it worked out great for me and it worked out great for them. But actually what I wanted to say next is to make sure to thank your bookseller. One of the big things I have to, you know, I always do after an event is I write thank you notes because those people come out on evenings, you know, when they should be at home having dinner with their family and they're selling books at my event. And that means a lot to me. I even have thanked Hudson Booksellers because for a while there I was in airports, and which of course was like my head exploding every time I walked through an airport. So I wrote thank you notes to everyone I could think of who worked for Hudson Booksellers who might have had a part in that, just to say thank you for making my dream come true. And I got notes back, and I don't know if it affected how long I was in those stores, but boy, I was so grateful. I was really, really grateful to them.
Well, you never know where that note ends up. You know?
Yeah.
I love Hudson. We just opened Parnassus Books in the Nashville airport. That's a partnership with Hudson. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So you can find something good to read before you get on the plane.
Especially since usually in the what I love when an independent bookseller partners with someone else and they're in a local bookstore is that you can actually get a flavor of that town, or you can get those staff recommendations as opposed to like the books that everybody has that are on the New York Times bestseller list.
Right. Right.
All right. I've been hoarding the microphone. KJ, do you want to ask her anything? Do you have any stuff you want to cover? She's making big eyes at me. She's like, wait, no, I thought you'd just keep talking.
She usually does. And somehow I'm just
she's just sitting here gazing at me.
So you have a huge social media presence for on behalf of Parnassus Books. Let's talk about how authors can connect with some of the bigger indies by doing some online following. I mean, like I'm a big follower. I feel very connected to you guys, and I don't live in Nashville.
Right.
Right. But we feel connected to you because through the magic of social media, we talk about a lot of the same things. We know you're a reader. You tweet about what you're reading. You follow us when we're tweeting about what we're reading. One of the things that means, and this sounds like such a small thing, but in the world of human people, it's big. There's a person behind every Twitter account. And, you know, at Parnassus, it used to be me all the time, and now we have some help, so it's other people sometimes too. But even those other people, KJ, who've never met you and aren't me and aren't already friends with you, see you tweeting back and forth with us, and they get to know your name. And they're like, oh, that's KJ.
Right.
You know, she loves to read this kind of thing and that kind of thing. Well, one day soon, when your wonderful book is showing up in our stack of early reads, that social media person is going to go, oh, that's KJ. I know her from Twitter.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
All the times you say, oh, I know that person from Twitter.
It's crazy.
Bookstores can get to know you from social media, and then you're a known entity.
I have to say, I have almost never been so devastated as I was the day that my flight was delayed and I was not able to drop in at Parnassus before my event in Nashville. It was going to be the high point,
to
the school.
But I came and brought you hot chicken.
She did. She brought me hot chicken at my event so that I could taste Nashville's hot chicken because, she knew I couldn't leave Nashville without having some of that. She made me burp on stage. But then when I told the audience that it was because of the hot chicken, they all forgave me.
They cheered.
Yeah, they did. They did.
But you know what? That's a great example. School events, you know, you guys are both writing about parenting. So obviously the people into whose hands we're going to need to get your books are parents. People who work in local bookstores are parents and have kids in schools, or they know the local libraries, or they know, you know, the local book clubs. These are the people who, when your book comes out and their kid's school goes, hey, we have some programming money coming up, who should we bring into town? Those booksellers who live in that town will say, oh, bring KJ, she's got this new book, she's great. Or bring Jess, this New York Times bestselling book is amazing. The people who live in those communities where you want to go in and speak in front of teachers and parents and that sort of thing are also people who are connected to bookstores.
I also have to say booksellers do this magic thing where sometimes books get shelved in weird places because of, you know, the intricacies and bureaucracy of, you know, how books get shelved, in especially in the bigger chains. But you people know where they are. And so if I go into a store and I say, you know, there's this book and it's about addiction, but it's also a memoir, but it's also this other thing. They say, oh, yes, we know exactly where that book is. It's in a weird place. Let me take you there. Right. That's invaluable to me because, you know, I might just think to go look in the memoir section and I would never, ever come across, you know, this book. And last night when I was talking to Northshire, I said, you know, I'm always really interested in addiction memoirs because my students are really interested in addiction memoirs. And suddenly now I have a list of books I had never heard of. And that to me is something that I value so highly. I really can't get over that. Yeah, it was really
good. Always ask your bookseller. If you can't find what you're looking for, find it, because we can use that special magical radar that we have in our fingers to find the book. But then we also might be able to tell you about a different book that you didn't even know you were looking for.
That's the best.
You know, and if we don't happen to have it in the store that day, if somebody came in before you and bought the last copy, we order it and send it to you.
You know what one of my favorite tables in bookstores are when they have them is one of our local booksellers would often do this table that's adult books for YA. So like there's that weird dead zone in between YA and books that teens might really like, but that aren't shelved in the YA area. That's my favorite table. That's the one I go to a lot. And some places have it and some places don't, but it's often the indie stores that tend to have things like that. And I really love that. Although for me, it's our local.
I'm going to go to work today and suggest we make a table like that. I love that idea.
The Dartmouth bookstore actually always has one. And it's one of my favorite places to find new suggestions for my students.
And it's for books that are technically categorized as adult literary fiction, but they're great reads for teens.
Yep. And in fact, I pulled one just the other day and I wasn't prepped with the author's name, but it's called The Rook. It's red. They're making a movie out of it. And that book I took to my class and I read them the opening because it was such an incredibly intriguing opening and it immediately left my hands. A student said, I must have that. And then he loved it.
Sometimes they're science fiction or mystery too. So genre books that are perfect for YA that, you know, aren't on those tables. So,
yeah,
it's fun. And plus, think how much fun that is to put together.
I know. And that's a good one.
Seriously.
I have to say one of my favorite parts of your emails also are the dogs. How'd the dog thing come about? I just have to know.
The dogs. So our owners, Karen and Ann, are animal lovers. Ann had a dog when the store first opened named Rose. Rose passed away. And then Ann got a new dog named Sparky. And so the dog was just around. And if Sparky was around, well, then the other staff want to bring their dogs too. So at any given time, there are at least a few well-behaved dogs on staff hanging around. Not my dog. She's bad. She tried to work in the store and she ran out the door after a customer. So she's been promoted to a work at home position. But the other dogs, we've got big dogs, little dogs, puppies, old dogs. And if they can behave and not, you know, mark their territory on the books, then they get to stay at work. And it's become kind of a thing. People come in the door and sometimes the first thing they'll ask is which dogs are working today.
Well, and because you guys photograph them and put them in your emails.
We do. Well, which I love. Cute, you know?
Well, and as you're just traveling and moving through the world, you can find yourself establishing these little relationships with bookstores that you know, maybe you only hit them once a year, but you're still once a year is more than nothing. And I think like I am not the most outgoing person in the world in a physical way. But when I go into a bookstore, there's almost always something to talk about. And especially if I've been before and bought something that I loved, I'll say to the person, you know, I was in here last year and I bought this memoir that you guys had on the table that was a local thing and I would never have seen it otherwise. And we'll strike up a conversation. And like I'm at my husband's college town, which is Durham, North Carolina, a couple times a year, usually. So I'm a huge fan of this little independent bookstore that's actually on campus and another one that's more of a used bookstore that's downtown. And also whenever I'm in there, I go and I tweet a picture, I put it up on social media, I show my big stack of things that I spot, and there are all these little independent bookstores around here that I end up in because we travel for hockey, and that's what my kids understand is part of the expectation, that if I drive them to an away hockey game, then afterwards we will be going to the bookstore.
That's part of the deal.
Part of the deal.
And she comes back with presents from all these places. Oh. And sometimes I get, when my book was out and sort of on stands and stuff in the front, she would send pictures of her children waving from near my book in some bookstore in New England somewhere.
Well, they love it. They love counting how many of the people who have a book that either I know or that we're connected to, which is fun. Really fun.
Well, and I actually take pictures a lot in bookstores for friends. Like if I see their book up on a shelf, which is always really weird because I was in a bookstore recently and it said specifically at the front door, no phones allowed in this store. And I had to say to the person, I can't remember where I was, but I had to say, oh, I promise I'm taking a picture, not because I'm going to go buy this somewhere else, but because I know the author of that book and I want to tweet it out that you have it. And she said, okay, well, that's all right then.
Isn't it sad that we have to have that sign?
Yeah.
I love that you're taking shelfies of your friend's books.
Shelfies.
And
I love
shelfies are the best.
Yeah, and you're visiting it. And I can't overestimate how important it is too, even if you don't, if you're not a world traveler and you don't have the opportunity to go in person to every bookstore everywhere, supporting them. It sounds like such a little thing, but like if you have a blog or you are an editor of some sort, or you're just a social media user person who likes to read, using links that go to the book on an indie bookstore's website or on IndieBound or even just on the publisher's website instead of Amazon, that supports indie bookstores and they notice. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what is one of the most fun experiences is when an author says, okay, I have a book coming out next month and I want to do all the pre-orders through your store. And the link they send out to all their followers is to that book at a store. And then we start getting all the orders from people all over the country and we ship those out. That forms, I mean, we're practically related after that. When an author does that, it's like, now you're in the family. Yeah. You handled your pre-orders. That's something anybody can do, no matter where you are.
That's a fantastic piece of advice. I hadn't thought of that. There's actually a writer up here, Tom Ryan, who wrote a book called Following Atticus and another book that Will's Red Coat that just came out recently. And he does all of his signed books through one bookstore as well. And that's another way that you could support your local bookstore. So they ship out his books for him after he goes in and he signs them and his dog gives their paw to graph in the book, depending on which dog it is. And now people go to that town, fans of his go to that town to go to that bookstore because they know that that's Tom's bookstore.
Of course.
Which is really, really cool.
On my author website, I have the link to order Penguins with People Problems links to Parnassus so that anybody who orders it through my own website is getting a signed copy.
That's very cool. I have to tell you, there's actually a picture of a penguin with a person problem on KJ's desk now.
The advanced reader copy. It's the frantic penguin clutching a laptop and waving its little penguiny arms.
It's very cute.
And it says, is it too much to ask that I have my basic needs met? Must I struggle like some kind of animal? What sort of existence is this? He screamed when his Wi-Fi signal flickered again. It's just a little reminder of me to keep it in context.
Yeah.
Based on a true story.
I want to ask you two questions that are going to require you to be honest about your bookseller, book person, bookstore opinions. Number one, how annoying is it when authors come in, when friends of authors come in and move their friends' books to other places so they're more prominent?
Not that we've ever done
that. We've never, ever done that before, but I've heard that people do this and we need to know how annoying it is for the booksellers.
It is not that annoying. And I'm being completely honest. I do it sometimes myself in my own store that I work in. I walk by and there's a novel that I've just finished that I really, really love and it's lined up with its spine facing out and I'll scoot some things around so I can turn it face out. That is not annoying. It would be annoying if you took the book and like moved it around to different sections so that we couldn't find it or something. But you know, you just give it a little nudge. That's completely understandable.
Excellent. Excellent.
I've done it with your book actually.
Yay.
I've moved it over to the end cap where people can see it.
Now, there's another thing that authors do sometimes, and Jenny Lawson is famous for doing this, as are some other famous authors, of doing ninja signings. Jenny calls them ninja signings. Yeah, so occasionally, for example, in airports or, you know, she'll go by and ninja sign her books, and then she'll tweet out that she has ninja signed. Sometimes she'll, you know, put little messages in there to travelers. And I have ninja signed books. And here's the interesting thing. I've been asked for ID before. And one time when I signed, I have
this vision of like, I'm just going to sign somebody else.
I know. I got asked for ID actually in the Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue in New York. They asked for my ID to make sure it was me. And I wanted to say, do you have a real problem with people?
That would be a peculiar kind of psychopathy.
Isn't that weird?
What I like to do is go into bookstores and sign Stephen King's books.
And then in an airport bookstore, a bookseller who I'm sure was just, you know, nervous, and she's probably getting paid, you know, minimum wage to be there. She said, you know, are you going to buy that book now that you've written in it? And I sort of explained the situation. And luckily, there was a woman standing next to me who said, no, I want to buy that book now. So I didn't get in trouble. But I've started doing it surreptitiously. And then I also tweet out the specific bookstore where it is. And then occasionally the bookstore will retweet that or whatever. But so what is your take on ninja signings?
It's not a terrible thing to do. I would say it can be an even better thing to do if instead of signing it and running off, you sign it, you actually introduce yourself to the booksellers when you get there and say, I see that you have my book on your shelves. I would love to sign it for you. Because then what happens is the bookseller says, yay, please do. They get excited. They move it up to the front on the signed bookshelves. They put a special signed edition sticker on it, and it's guaranteed to move even faster. So I would say make it even better by telling them you're doing it.
You know, I think that has worked really well for me, especially at the sort of more local booksellers, the indie booksellers. Okay. For some of the chain ones, it's been a little more complicated. Now, here's the last question. What do you do about the author's teenagers that are so humiliated by the idea of you going into bookstores and searching out your own book so that you can sign it? My older son thinks it is the most egregious show of egotism and narcissism that I would go into a bookstore and sign my own books.
Your kids just know how to push your buttons. They don't even really think that. They just like to mess with you, and they're really good at
it. They are really good at it.
I bet they're secretly very proud. I have teenagers too, and I am the most terrible source of embarrassment to them in every single thing that I do. But I think secretly they're probably pretty proud.
Can I come back around to one little thing that you glossed over?
Please do.
Could you tell us a little about that Emmy? Because that's pretty amazing.
I was surprised by that too.
Yeah, I even knew about it, but I hate to say I have forgotten. Could you please tell us what's that about? Because I know very few people with Emmys, and I would like to know more.
Do you keep it in the bathroom?
Yeah, where is it?
Right now it's on a shelf in my office. Earlier it was under my daughter's bed like a Barbie because she was making clothes for it.
That's because they're so ashamed of her.
Oh, please. I need pictures of that.
We have to cover her up. She made her a little like Wilma Flintstone dress. It was really cute. So the Emmy came about earlier this year. It's like, I didn't know how many categories there were for Emmys. Like, so you know, when you watch the Emmys on TV, there's that part where they go, earlier we had another ceremony and here's a quick recap of that. Then there's even more Emmys beyond that, ones that happen for regional shows and teeny tiny shows. And, you know, our show it's a tiny little show. It's called an interstitial because on public television, instead of big chunks of advertising between shows, if you've got a 30-minute slot would house a 20-something minute television show. Well, then you've got these extra minutes to burn. Instead of a big chunk of advertising, public television actually runs original content in those slots. That's what an interstitial is. So that's what our show is.
And remind us of the title. What is it again?
A Word on Words. Anybody can watch it anywhere at awordonwords.org. And I co-host it with another writer, JT Ellison, and we have a wonderful production team. But it won an Emmy for interstitial. So
that's so exciting. Did you get to go to like a little ceremony and stand up there and accept your award?
Yeah. And I have to admit, I underestimated what a big deal it was. I thought, well, this is, it's a regional thing. I'm sure it's just like a conference room and whatever. And I didn't even really dress up enough. I should have worn like a long dress. I should have treated it like a big thing because it was a big, big deal.
That is so cool.
That's really amazing.
It was great. Yeah. If you look at the pictures, you can see like all the rest of our production team looking beautiful and extremely glamorous. And I'm just kind of in like a work dress. Like an idiot.
Well, when you win again, you'll know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really nice to have it recognized because we work hard on that show. And that's another way, by the way, that having a great relationship with an indie bookstore spills over into other things. The authors who we interview for that show are chosen from the roster of authors that Parnassus brings into town because we shoot it here in Nashville. So if we're going to interview who's a great example? Elizabeth Strout, who wrote My Name is Lucy Barton.
And which, by the way, my husband is raving about. He loves that book.
Oh, my God. So good. So she came to town for her book tour because Parnassus asked to have her here and hosted an event for her. And because she was here in Nashville, we could shoot an episode of this show that is shot in Nashville with her in it. And now we have this great little episode of television with Elizabeth Strout. So that's those bookstore relationships spread to a lot of things.
Can we do the part of my favorite part, I have to say, of the show is when I get to hear what KJ's been reading, but I really want to hear what you have been reading.
Oh, I want to hear what you guys are reading too.
Do you need a minute?
No, I warned her. What have you been reading?
I could do this all day, so you have to just cut me off.
Okay.
say enough. Okay, so I just finished a book that reminds me of when I was little and I would get a big fat new novel and I would know that for like a week I had something good to read because it wouldn't be over soon.
Oh, tell us.
It's called The Heart's Invisible Furies by John Boyne, who is an Irish writer. He writes for both adults and children. He wrote The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. And it's a big, fat, wonderful, epic story about a man who was born in the 1940s in Ireland, and it goes all the way through the present day. And he's born to a 16-year-old who is cast out of her little Irish town for being pregnant, and she won't name who the father is. And he's adopted by a family, and the story just sort of follows him in his life. And it's amazing. I couldn't put it down. I was so sad when it ended. It's fantastic. It has a bright pink cover. Well, not bright pink. It has a light pink cover with red The Heart's Invisible Furies on it if you're looking for it in your bookstore. And it'll be up in the new releases because it just came out.
See, that's also how I know you're a bookstore person because, you know, when you're looking for a book, you're looking for a specific color. And so when I know what color I'm looking for, that makes finding it so much easier. Thank you for that.
There you go. Look for pink and red, pink with big red letters on it. Another book that I have just been raving about, it is one of my favorite books of the year. And it's just so different and wonderful. It has an orange cover with hot pink on it, and it's called Stay With Me, and it is by a Nigerian writer named Ayobami Adebayo. She is a debut writer. She's the editor of a literary magazine, and it's her first book, but she's not like a newbie writer. She has studied with Margaret Atwood. She's studied with all these amazing African writers. You can see the influence of all these people in her writing, but she really has this singular voice. And what I loved about this novel was, A, it's short, and sometimes it's just nice to have a book that is quick. But B, the pacing moves so quickly. It's about a young couple who meet in college and they get married right out of school. And from the minute you turn the first page of this book, you can't put it down because you want to know what's going to happen. They decide a couple years into their marriage that they're going to try to get pregnant, but she doesn't get pregnant. And their extended family members and community members all start sort of meddling in their lives. And you've got family members insisting that he take a second wife if she can't produce children. And everyone's lying to each other and there are all these cover-ups, and it just, you sort of want to shake these characters and say, just sit down and tell each other everything. But it's amazing. It's one of my favorite books, and it's beautifully written, and just, it sort of satisfies all those different parts of your brain, like the part that wants to read really good sentences, but also the part that wants to be really entertained. So I love that one. Do I have time to do one more?
One more.
Okay. The brand new one out this week from Jesmyn Ward, who won the National Book Award a few years ago for her novel Salvage the Bones. Her brand new one is called Sing, Unburied Sing. It has a red cover with big blue letters on it and a black bird.
I've seen that cover. It's everywhere.
You've absolutely seen it. There's a reason it's everywhere. I try to be balanced when I'm recommending books to people. I try to recommend a sort of a mix of like some sad books, some happy books, some short books. This is a sad book. I will say I cried so hard my husband tried to take it out of my hands and I started slapping him and going, "Don't take my book." But it's heartbreaking, but it's also on a literary level, just separate from everything else. It reminded me in a lot of ways of Beloved by Toni Morrison, in that it has sort of a mystical otherworldly quality to it. But I found it even a little more accessible. Like, I think it's it's not just a book that people are going to read in English class in college. I think it's a book that everybody's going to be picking up. It's about a family. I think the reason I was crying so hard is there's a boy in it who's a young teenage boy, and I have a young teenage boy, so of course I was relating. But this 13-year-old boy has a toddler sister, and he lives with his grandparents, and his mother kind of comes in and out of his life. She's a drug addict, and she decides that she's going to take the kids with her on a road trip to go pick up their father, who is getting out of prison. And so it's a road trip tale, and it has that kind of structure of a road trip tale, but you see a lot of it through the boy's eyes, and it's phenomenal.
Well, I hope my husband's not listening, because I now know the three books I'm going to be getting for him really, really soon.
There you go. What are you reading?
I generally read nonfiction, but I've been listening a lot lately because all my reading in physical form mostly is for research these days. But I read a book called The Secrets She Keeps by Michael Robotham, Robotham. And I guess he has a series, but this is not part of the series. And it's sort of one of the, like, if you've liked a lot of those sort of Ruth Ware, you know, British, you know, Girl on the Train, kind of those books, then you'll really like this book. Lately I've been having some books that have been disappointing me on that front, and this one did not disappoint me on that front. It was really, really good. KJ, what have you been reading?
Well, it's definitely lighter than your offerings, but my reading tends to be. I'm not really an award-winning book kind of reader, typically. So I read The Jane Austen Project, which Jess bought for me. It's by Kathleen Flynn. And
I saw it and I said, oh, we must read this.
Yeah, it's the story of people who travel back in time to try to save. The premise is that Jane Austen actually finished her book, The Watsons. Uh-huh. And they're trying to get the manuscript, or at least that's what they think they're trying to do. And it turns out they're trying to do something a little different. And what was really entertaining about this book is that it sort of throws all the time travel book genre premises out the window about midway through, so that you're at this moment when really anything could happen.
Huh.
You don't know. They could change time. They could decide to stay. They could. It all feels open. I mean, it's got kind of a feeling of like I think Deborah Harkness trilogy. Mm-hmm. There's no witches and vampires in this, but it's just got kind of that feeling to it. But an interesting thing about it is that ultimately, I really enjoyed it. I liked the characters. I couldn't put it down. It's not a fun book.
Huh.
I was about to say it sounds like fun.
Well,
it's not fun.
It is. I mean, it's a really enjoyable read, but it doesn't leave you on a lighthearted note. Hmm. It's more thoughtful than that. It's not just a time travel tale of Jane Austen. It's got a little more to it. So
it reminded me that when I looked at it, I thought immediately of A.S. Byatt's Possession. And I sort of thought, oh, there's this sort of literary. Anytime you've got a literary thing and a time travel-y thing and a, you know, dorky people researching things, I'm all in. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, that's all
I
need.
It's like that. It's definitely. It's a good read. It make a good holiday read because you could read it and not want to put it down and then put it down and go back to it after like some stressful time with the family and be engrossed. Yeah.
That's
but
a
not depressed.
Purpose for a so, book. That's
it is a good purpose.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say when you said the Jane Austen Project for a second, I was thinking of that thing called
Jane Austen Project. Oh.
Which is, you know, where they have contemporary writers doing, not rewriting, what's the word I'm looking for? Doing contemporary retellings of Austen stories.
Oh, right, like Curtis Sittenfeld's book.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, which I think was part of that.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
It was. That's what I thought you were talking about.
No, I did love that book, though.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I'm going to read the Jane Austen Project soon. I'm excited about that one. We cannot thank you enough for coming and talking, and we could probably, I mean, this has ended up being almost like a double episode kind of situation because we have so much to talk about, but
I can't thank you enough for doing your show. I recommend it to writers who are just starting out all the time. I think you're doing a wonderful service to people
Yay!
Who want to.
We love doing it.
Honestly, it's just so much fun, and it's the like we have said before, the learning curve is so steep for this stuff, so why not flatten it out
it
a
is,
little bit?
But you're saving people so much time and misery. You're helping them cut through a lot of the mistakes they might otherwise make.
Because saving people misery. That's our new tagline. Saving people misery.
Saving writers misery at every
one writer
step
at a time.
Turn.
Well, I'm already plotting how I can get back to Nashville for some hot chicken and also not on a delayed flight so that I can actually be at Parnassus because it is, it's one of those, it's so weird to think that there are places I would go just because of the bookstore, but Nashville is definitely one of them. Definitely one of them.
I love it. Well, I can't wait.
Good. All right. And so until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Listeners, if you're not following along with Jess on Instagram and TikTok, you should be, because she's killing it with advice on kids and addiction, and because she's learning things about Reels and TikTok that could apply to you too, and she'll be sharing more soon, so you're going to want to know what's been going on. Look for her on Instagram as @teacherleahy and on TikTok as @JessLeahy.